I did a thing I do sometimes now, this week. I went down to Portland to buy a computer that's 20-some years old, just for my collection, because I collect old computer things. And on the way, between Tacoma and Portland, there's this one particular Christian radio station that's just the right kind of nutty. And as far as I'm concerned, and the whole time I was on my way down there, it was all about keeping the family tradition alive and protecting our ability to go to the bathroom. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the air, but I've decided to start thinking about this whole gender identity bathroom thing as the war on taking a dump. That's what it is, because frankly, it's the only like surface of this that makes any sense to me. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining me today, as usual, is the lovely Becky. How are you?
I'm well, Sam. Thank you.
And likely the equally lovely Dan. How are you?
Also well.
Fantastic. So, I mean, there's two sides of this that really annoys me. And one is that we must preserve traditional marriage, and we must preserve our ability to...
Wait, do people get married in bathrooms now?
Yeah, apparently. But,
oh, man.
Well, that's the weird thing, is they're using the same rhetoric they've been using since, like, 1986 on this one, and it's completely unchanged. And you can just kind of hear it in the back of their heads that they understand that fighting for taking a dump in their own cultural weirdness milieu... where it requires some sort of gender identity quiz in order to go to the bathroom. That's what they've got left.
I guess that's a step forward, perhaps,
I'm gonna say it's a fairly lateral step.
Lateral step, because in the meantime, we do have people that are definitely suffering and feeling threatened by this. And when, you know, there's a lot of memes that we've been seeing that says, hey, psst, newsflash, transgender people have been using the bathroom with you for all this time, and nobody cared.
For as long as there have been bathrooms.
Or, yes, yeah. Exactly. Or for as long as there have been gender-segregated bathrooms. And yet, at the same time, there's a huge amount of attention being drawn to this that could fuel, you know, more animosity, at the best, towards trans people.
Well... they're still using the we must preserve traditional family values stuff. And that's an argument that never made a lot of sense to me. Like, because my family, which mine does not, I'm pretty sure my family doesn't look like theirs, that because my family is laid out along different lines, that somehow that makes their family less. Like America has some sort of strategic family value reserve, that unless we stick to this full identity of this association of family with Christianity and patriotism, that somehow family means less to them. And that's one of the things that I never really got. And now they're tying it directly to people wanting to take a dump unhindered. I'm annoyed.
I find the whole idea just sort of ridiculous. Like, what exactly is it about a bathroom that makes it some sort of like a sacred place? I mean, there's partial nudity involved, so yeah. There's, you know, some vulnerability, but otherwise it really does sort of throw the question out there, why do we have gender segregated bathrooms to begin with? I mean, if you have a stall with a door, if I run out of teepee, I don't care if the hand, you know, coming under the wall has fingernail polish or not, provided it has a roll of teepee in it. I don't care who is sitting next to me in the next stall, provided they hand over the teepee. Like, it's not,
right.
You know.
I've actually taught in schools that had gender-neutral bathrooms, and it was actually quite lovely of a community, because you saw the bathroom as a place to go do your business and then promptly return to the business of being part of your school community. There was far less congregating in the bathroom to gossip or to, you know, make trouble or to, you know, weep or to put on your makeup. And it was just, you go in and, you know, you close the door, and the stalls were very private, you know, with the walls going all the way to the ground. And then the sinks were outside, and the sinks were visible to everyone. And so for all of those things that you needed to, if you needed to go and have a private place to go weep, right, then you know that you could go seek out the counselor's office as opposed to being alone. Much less pressure on sort of physical looks and doing your makeup or, you know, any of those kinds of things. And it made for a very lovely, egalitarian environment.
Every argument that I've heard basically boils down to somebody of the opposite gender might, or of whatever, might watch you defecate.
Somebody might do that anyway.
Right. when we're talking in these terms, the gender or the identity of the person watching me defecate, that's like concern number 8,403. I have a few larger concerns going on here. Rather than maintaining my concept of sexuality or gender identity or anything like that. Yeah. I talk about it this way because I literally have no... I don't get this. I mean, with marriage, it was, you know, religious people thought they owned marriage because marriages happen in churches. I can see why they had some sort of proprietary feeling about that. But now, all right, you lost that one and you lost it pretty bad. Now... you're on bathrooms, and now I just have no... You are a place I do not understand.
The argument I hear is we must protect children, right? We're standing up for family values if we protect our children when they go into bathrooms.
By doing gender checks when they go take a dump.
But here's the thing. Why don't you protect children, the population of children that has one of the highest rates of both contemplating, attempting, and completing suicide, yeah. Transgender and gender nonconforming children? How about we protect those kids? That's actually protecting vulnerable children.
If protecting children is really your aim... I would suggest something that wouldn't be so rife for exploitation as gender verification to use a bathroom. We're already getting reports of people who are being seriously mistreated, bordering on, if not actual assault, because they happen to look like they're in the wrong bathroom. And now, by the time this goes on the air, this will have been a week ago, but just yesterday, the White House issued a... something to educational institutions, which is actually really kind of why I wanted to bring this up.
Right. So it's a directive from the White House saying expanding the Title IX rulings and regulations, which is preventing sex-based discrimination, to say this should be incorporating gender identity and gender nonconforming children. So please, everyone in all 50 states and our territories with your school systems, you must accommodate transgender students and individuals in places of privacy like bathrooms and locker rooms, and give them access to using the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity. And
basically the status quo.
For in Washington state, at least for 10 years, has been the case. Now, we know that just because there's a regulation in place at a state level or there's a directive by the government doesn't mean that it's always playing out in that way, every which way and every little, you know, nook and cranny of our country. But this was a bold step by the, federal government to be able to do this. And, you know, we got to say it's not a law. It is a directive, and for school districts and states that, you know, sort of flirt with non-compliance, they might be at risk of losing federal funding. But that would be something very, very far down the road. And I think that other than, you know, aside from actually threatening school districts or states with a loss of money, it's more of a show of compassion of saying this is who we want our country to be. These are the values that we want to have as a country. And so when you're talking about protecting people and families and being compassionate, this is what our current government is saying represents that.
Yeah.
As opposed to one where you have to have only one definition of marriage, one definition of who's a girl, who's a boy, what you can be, what you can do, what you can wear.
Well, that was precisely what they were trying to enforce. And frankly, it never worked as well as they thought they did. Because when things fell through the cracks, they just pointed, screamed Satan, and got on with their lives, completely unaware of the wreckage they were leaving behind them as they went.
I would also say this is another instance of science denial, where if we're taking this to a public school system, then we've got science denial in schools again. Because gender, biologically, is not binary. Mm-hmm. We're all taught the simplistic version that there are XX individuals that we call female and XY individuals, that is to say, have a pair of X chromosomes or an X chromosome and a Y chromosome for male. But that's really not the case. That's an oversimplification of what's actually going on in genetics.
Oh, wait, so when we're talking about, we talked about this, lie to children.
Right, lies to children.
Okay.
A lie to children is something that you tell someone in science to give them the basic concept so that they can understand the next step. So just as biologically speaking, there is no, or there are very few pure XX or XY people, because there are so many variations of X chromosomes, because there are so many variations of Y chromosomes, running into somebody who was, as far as the literature goes, precisely an XX or precisely an XY with none of those variations would be much rarer than running into any of the many variations. And this isn't just a physical sex thing. We know that our psychologies are also based on neuronal structures, the way that our brains are put together, and that we have ideas of what constitutes a male brain versus a female brain. The differences seem to be getting smaller and smaller and smaller with every published work. But even still, there's variation. There is no, this is a male brain, this is a female brain. There is a spectrum with lots of spaces in between for different kinds of constructions.
So when someone says that we're passing a law that restricts children to use the bathroom of their biological sex assigned at birth, is there, I mean, how many different bathrooms, Dan, would we have to have? I mean, how many different biological sexes? How many different combinations of chromosomes would we have to have? Does every stall get its own? What if there's a huge line for the pure XX? What if there's a huge line for the, you know, the triple Y chromosome genetic variation? How many bathroom stalls do we have to set up, Dan?
It would be ridiculous. We would have bathrooms approaching an infinite belt wrapping around the universe. That's the amount of variations in genetics, I mean, around the universe is an exaggeration, but around the world would not be an exaggeration to serve a single population with the amount of variations that you'll find in, say, a public school with 3,000 students.
Well, I think it's very clear that we're talking about a cultural identity rather than anything biological, anything, oh, I don't know, created by a deity. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Going to break, and when we come back, might continue on this one.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. I want to bring it back, but it's
more than basic, 'cause you can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. Yeah, so we were talking about the whole fight, the war against taking a dump, which I may get in trouble for because it seems like I'm minimizing a thing where people are actually being harmed. And Honestly, that's why I'm calling it the war on taking a dump. Not because you don't have, you know, if you're on the right side of this one, if you're on the sensitive side of this one, if you're on the side of this that tries to meet humanity as they are, rather than how they're defined in a book that remains unchanged for 2,500 or so years,
mm-hmm.
That's not the person I'm talking to. I'm talking to the person who's this is what they're fighting. They're fighting your ability to use the bathroom unhindered. Does that not sound silly and stupid while causing an absolute amount of harm? This is one of those situations where I've talked about how humor, how I do use humor as a coping mechanism. And when I first thought about gender-neutral bathrooms, I was like, literally, I was half a second like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. It's because other people might see me pee. Wait a minute. I wouldn't like that anyway. I got through that in 10 seconds. No conversation. There was no moment of gnosis. There were, you know, pink lasers hit my brain and suddenly I understood. I just thought about it for 2 seconds. Like, oh, this is ridiculous. I don't understand why we're fighting this fight. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to convey, I guess. Sticking with defecation, a group of Jain monks have asked the government to allow them to continue to defecate in the open. Representatives of the Digambara Jains have asked the government of Madhya Pradesh for an exemption to any potential new law prohibiting public defecation. The current administration is embarking on a Clean India mission, which includes the construction of numerous public bathrooms with the intention of ending open defecation by 2019. The Digambara Jains follow a centuries-old tradition of going without clothes and attend nature's call in secluded woods and other outdoor areas.
Now, I am not an expert on Jainism as far as religions go, but I did do some background reading on this particular sect of Jains. And yes, it is true they are known as the Naked Jains.
And we
should say, in terms of petitioning the government, we're talking about the government of India and the government of this particular area of India. But the thing that really puzzled me was, why would you want to have the ability to eliminate your waste out in the open? And I did a little bit more reading and found that one of the tenets was eliminating the bodily wastes in areas where living things do not gather. Now, we can say, where living things do not gather, well, everything has some living things.
How far down do you want to go when we're talking about where living things gather? So they need to eliminate waste where living things do not gather?
Right. That's one of the tenets as far as I have come to understand it.
I would have to say, then, that a public or private restroom that is, you know, cleaned regularly with a disinfectant is going to have a lot less living things gathered there than, say, the base of a tree out in the woods, which is, in essence, a gathering of living things as the dominant feature of the landscape.
So where could you really get where there would be no gathering of living things? I mean, is there anything more?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The void of space. That is where there is no gathering of living things. You could literally go outside the station and void your bowels.
Assuming there's no water bears around.
Assuming there are no tardigrades around. That is true. Yeah.
And tardigrades are the living things that can survive in the void of space?
They can survive, yeah.
But do they gather?
They don't really gather, no. No, they don't go to space on purpose.
Well, I'm seeing sort of an alignment of concepts here between both sides of this issue in that, the Jains were always described to me as far as religious people as like one of the good ones. Their whole purpose is not harming creatures whatsoever, is that that's how it was explained to me. I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert or anything
sure.
like that. This is the Clean India mission is to, you know, install public toilets and I assume disease control and
certainly
harm, you know, less harm to the environment and to other human beings is a concept here that's leading to this movement. Mission. I shouldn't say movement.
maybe you should.
Maybe I ought. Yeah. And so it's like I feel like there might be a way forward for this one.
See, in my culture, in my religious upbringing, which is Judaism, this would be just like the perfect hack ever because you take a law that's written and then you find a way to sort of fiddle around with it to make it fit your particular circumstance. So I could
right.
see that if this were, say, you know, in one of the Talmudic tractates of, you know, eliminating your bodily waste where the living things don't gather, then you could sort of play that headspace of, well, as long as we keep our things very, very well disinfected, connected. And as long as we make sure that bathrooms are not a place for, like, parties and gatherings and, you know, weddings. I mean, we just established that there are no weddings that happen in bathrooms.
What, you've never heard of a bridal shower?
Oh my goodness, Dan. We couldn't go one segment without you making a...
No, we don't go 5 minutes without making it. This is my life now.
So
thanks, guys.
You could make that hack, but I don't know if that's part of the Jain tradition. It's certainly part of the Jewish tradition, and that's how I would encourage pluralistic government entities to try and work with folks to say, you know what, if your motivation is to not harm creatures... Certainly, you know, going into our bathrooms is a place where we can treat things in a sanitary way.
Very clean. That's as far as the amount of living things proportional to, say, forest soil, which is really made up partially of decaying organic matter and mostly of the things that are eating it and living in it.
Right. So when I was a kid and I decided I wanted to work in radio, I'm going to grow up and spend 25 minutes talking about going to the bathroom on the radio. Man, I would have been so tickled. But I think it's time to move on. An Arkansas man is in jail after threatening a number of politicians over teaching the Bible in schools. Maverick Dean Bryan wrote letters to 7 Arkansas mayors threatening to hang them from the mighty oaks on the courthouse lawn if they didn't replace Common Core curriculums with the Bible in local schools. The letters also demanded that mayors no longer accept the votes of homosexuals, Muslims, socialists, communists, atheists, or anyone who worships any god other than Jesus Christ. Dean, who has an extensive criminal history, also put ads in a local newspaper asking for $23 million to overthrow the government.
How's that crowdfunding campaign going, Maverick?
Now, you know what? I could see that making money.
Is Maverick a title? Is that like, you know, rabbi?
According to this, it's his name.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So... I guess I feel a little bit out of my element with this one because I follow Florida Man on Facebook, and this is Arkansas Man.
Yeah, this is not even one end of the obtuse triangle.
No, it's out there.
Yeah,
but I mean, clearly this isn't like, you know, an organized movement we've got here. We've got some nutter who thinks that you can overthrow the government with $23 million.
Well, there's a lot here that I'm used to seeing from this kind of thing.
But where, all in one place?
No, even most of this in one place. Give me lots of monies so that I can replace the United States government with Jesus. I'm used to that. I've seen that in a lot of places. I've also seen the same types of people pass laws that say homosexuals, Muslims, socialists, communists, atheists, anyone who's ever consumed a baked good without yeast, anyone who has ever been to Mexico, anyone who has ever, you know, cannot vote, are not citizens, etc. I mean, honestly, that's what this guy's asking for is even more inclusive than our original list of what made you a citizen.
Right.
So, I mean, this is territory we've been over before. The part that I don't get, the part that confuses the stuff out of me, and I promised I'd stop talking about that. The thing that confuses me is replacing Common Core curriculums with the Bible. I understand that Common Core is now among the in the conspiracy trade, the new samizdat, the new, you know, it's the new
chemtrails.
Yeah, it's the
it's
programming
a buggable word.
Yeah, it's the programming that our children receive in schools that will somehow all turn us into Soviets, even though that's not a thing anymore.
Godless homosexual Muslims, atheists,
yes,
who don't worship Jesus Christ.
Right.
So, yes, I mean, in my job as a public school teacher, occasionally we'll come across, you know, like, you know, pedagogical disagreements over what skills should be taught when and how best to do it, you know, and say these are standards that we have to meet and we should create a curriculum that helps us address these standards and grow these capacities within our children. But never, never in my experience as a public school teacher has the debate said, maybe we should just scrap that whole thing and just read the Bible, you know, from 7:30 till 2:10 in the afternoon.
I'm used to seeing that a little bit, but it's this attack on Common Core. And it's not like, and the thing about it is, I don't know much about the Common Core curriculum. I look at what I know mostly about is people showing the, like on social media, the math things, the way you do math, and about how that's so much harder and it's so confusing. And I'm looking at it and like, Yeah, no, that's the way I
think already.
Yeah.
It works way better. Curriculum.
Well, I don't know.
Here's the magic thing. It's that it's a series of skills and capacities that we want young people to be able to grow and gain so that they can actually be adults who think, right? And different states have different ways of incorporating that. Sometimes an entire district will buy a whole pre-made thing of a curriculum that it purports to align with Common Core. At my school, we're permitted to create curriculum in a dynamic way that addresses the skills through Common Core. So there's a lot of different ways that it could play out. But here's the thing. Bottom line, Common Core isn't a curriculum.
I think that may be a distinction without a difference.
You might. I figured you might.
No, I mean, so it's not a curriculum. It's a thing curricula are made out of.
Well, here's an example of one of my Common Core standards.
Okay.
Students will take two texts, compare and contrast them, see how the authors take different approaches, and evaluate and integrate those. That's a standard that I have to approach and that I have to teach, right? Mm-hmm. I have to get my kids to show evidence of being able to do this. Which texts do I want to do? I'll take a documentary on Dominican Republic and a tourism industry produced video on Dominican Republic. Two different texts. We can evaluate what the author's biases and approaches they took. And then we say, which one do you think, showed the more convincing view? Which one showed the more positive view?
So there's no curriculum designer on Common Core, is what you're saying.
No. I can be at my place, my own curriculum designer.
I don't think that clears the air at all. I think it actually makes it more complex.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Well, teaching is complex and messy and not simple like one book, the Bible.
I've always kind of felt that the more books you have available in a school, sort of the better.
Right.
A Bible is not a library, and a Bible is not an internet of information. I guess I don't have a whole lot to add on to that. It's well, here's one book, or hundreds of millions of books.
Yeah.
Which would you prefer to have access to for a thorough education?
Yeah, sola scriptura education is not something I've heard a lot of people advocate. Like, the whole, conceptually, the only thing you could teach from a Bible. Fortunately, that I would not call that a common concept. Even among Christians.
I don't know if this man, Mr. Maverick, knows about the internet. For his crowdfunding campaign, he actually took out ads in the local newspaper. I mean, we know. How are you going to most successfully get money raised? You do a GoFundMe or you do a Indiegogo campaign or something like that.
Kickstarter, yeah, something.
But
I guess the question would be, did he call it crowdfunding?
Oh, I don't think so. This was me saying he's putting out local ads asking for $23 million to overthrow the government. Could you overthrow the government with $23 million? Would it take more? Would it take less?
I refuse to answer that question.
It depends on the complexity of your doomsday device.
I guess it depends which government.
And how far you are along in your research already.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to knock over somebody's treehouse club, yeah, $23 million will probably do it.
Could you build enough bathrooms for every genetic distinction with $23 million?
In a school of, say, 3,000 students? Maybe.
You'd need about
3,000 bathrooms, yeah. Maybe.
Fair enough.
23 million. Jeez. Which government? Are we talking about the government of Kiribati, which is so far literally underwater now that there are no people there anymore? Like, they've moved to other
Kiribati government? Like, maybe with $23 million, you can lift the island of Kiribati up and create your own government where you don't have to have any common core.
You could buy some very large and powerful pumps.
To pump the whole ocean. Here we go. Oh, hey, global warming solved. Join the original Motto Project, Humanists of Washington, the Ask an Atheist Gang, and others on June 29th at 11 a.m. for a rally in Olympia to raise awareness for the motto we believe our nation deserves, E Pluribus Unum. Someday I'll say that right. Take part in the secular alternative to Reverend Franklin Graham's rally, being held at the same time on the Capitol steps, in which he intends to preach the gospel as part of his Decision America tour. Go to bringbackourmotto.com for more information. And if you like what you're hearing here,
come here, Sam, speak.
Yeah, like, do the political thing. Dude, it's the dance. It's the dance craze that's taking over America, the beer and the nation in 2016.
No word on whether America beer will be served.
No, I'm pretty sure, given that it's a political rally, the word would be no. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about lettuce. Yeah, I guess we're walking up the digestive system backwards this week.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. An organic farm in New Mexico has become the first grower of kosher lettuce outside of Israel. Preferred Produce, who previously established themselves in the organic produce market, has made a shift into growing kosher lettuce to sell to Jewish communities on the East Coast. The company earned a five-year contract with a distributor with plans to produce $4 million worth of lettuce, with the potential of earning a 40-year contract at the end of the current deal. Kosher lettuce is lettuce that has no contact with insects or creeping things, as the Torah describes to them. And now our international Torah correspondent, Rebecca Friedman.
So, the creeping things is one of my favorite descriptions in the five books, in the Hebrew scriptures, in the Torah.
It's got kind of a 50s drive-in film feel to it.
It does. Yeah. It totally does. But here's the other thing. It's sometimes it's translated as creeping, crawling things, sometimes swarming things. And at the end of it, right? So, creeping, swarming, crawling, four legs. Four legs. Four-legged insects. All of those four-legged insects, they are not kosher.
Four-legged insects. I'm trying to think. So if you were going with legs as ambulatory, strictly only something that you walked on, I guess they're talking about like mantids, you know, like praying mantises, because they walk around on four and hold the other two as sort of weapons for grabbing their prey. So as long as this lettuce hasn't had any mantids on it, it should be kosher.
But little wormies and...
Yeah, little wormy deals. And it's, you can have all the nematodes you want.
No, here's the thing. So we've been talking a lot about where living things are.
And right.
The bottom line is, in a field of lettuce, you're going to have more living things than just lettuce plants, right?
Yeah.
We don't need a biologist on here to hear that.
For successful lettuce plants, you certainly hope so.
Right, yeah. And also, if we're talking about like hydroponically grown lettuce... Well, we're getting to the point where it's got to be in a clean room with a HEPA filter and people in white suits, because we have endospore bacteria. We have fungi that are circulating through the atmosphere that having it not on soil or not in water still does not suffice. Unless you're raising this lettuce in the previously mentioned vacuum of space, which, as far as I know, can't be done, but I don't want to overcommit to the idea. That lettuce is going to have living things on it, creeping things, living things. We have mites that are endemic to different species of plants that are microscopic, but this is one of those reasons why things like scripture have to change as scientific knowledge changes, because we didn't have microscopes when we wrote rules about things not being covered with congregations of living things or creeping things. Because now we know that pretty much everything, unless it has been recently cleaned with alcohol, bleach, and radiation, is covered with creeping living things.
I didn't even need to be told that. I had one of those hydroponic kits for a long time, and the one time I tried to grow the salad kit, it got an infestation from nowhere. I don't know.
From nowhere.
Assuming something landed on it or just came with it. Absolutely necessary. You know, that's the thing. Okay, the other side of that is the four-legged creepy things. Because it's not like eyes worked differently. You know, when this stuff was written, it's not like they were all, you know, hopped up on meth or something like that. It's like I assume they could see insects and they could count above six or four.
Wasn't there like a base 12 counting system that was used by Hebrew people?
I am unfamiliar with Hebraic math at this time.
But I guess that still wouldn't change four.
True. And one of my favorite things about bugs in the Torah is that all grasshoppers and locusts and crickets are kosher. And I love it because it makes no sense based on all the rest of the rules. But it does make sense when you think about, okay, you got a bunch of people living in a desert where there isn't much, you know, water. And occasionally, I mean, we have, at least story-wise, a history or a narrative that would include occasional plagues of locusts. So what happens when plagues of locusts come? They eat all your crops. You can't feed your animals anything. You can't eat any of the plants. What is there left to eat but the locusts?
The joke's on you, locusts.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're vegetable fed.
You know, maybe that's why they changed it to the four legs thing. Because, I mean, locusts have six ambulatory legs, you know, four up front and two long ones in the back.
Maybe those ones aren't considered legs. I don't know. Those are the little, you know, that's the things that make the cricket sound, right? The little chirpies.
Well, it's also what they jump with, which is sort of a defining feature of locusts.
Of legs.
I wonder what technology is involved to keep bugs off of it. Do they, like, wrap the...
Actually, so here's the thing. The particular grower has been invested in trying to transition to organic farms, but for their kosher fields of lettuce, they're actually not going to be organic because they will be using a synthetic pesticide to get rid of spider mites. And apparently spider mites are the biggest thing that, one of the biggest problems in terms of the bugs on these particular, you know, pieces of lettuce.
Specifically
in this
for
area.
Kosher lettuce or just lettuce full stop?
Or for hydroponic lettuce?
Not sure at this point. Here's the other thing. This distributor actually is in southern New Mexico. So it's a place that I'm familiar with. I've had family members that have lived there. I literally have walked in onion fields and pecan groves in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And this area where they're going to be growing these kosher lettuce heads, I guess, is in Las Cruces, New Mexico. There's bugs all over the place. It may be the desert, but the desert is a fairly rich ecosystem, especially if you're then putting a bunch of fertilizer and growing plants in it. All of a sudden, now you have an extremely fertile area.
Right, that's going to draw in living things from a long ways.
And it's a fairly water-rich plant, mm-hmm. and you're growing it in a desert where everything is trained to look for water.
Yes.
Just putting a huge target out there, basically.
You are. Now, in terms of kosher produce, the things that I sort of grew up understanding and learning is that for a product to be kosher, there's a bunch of different rules, but something like spaghetti. Well, there's no obvious meat or milk. There's not going to be any pork products in some dry spaghetti. And so the idea is that you have
I'm sure there's some bacon guy working on that right now.
Exactly. Someone in Seattle is trying to make bacon-flavored spaghetti. But
well, the wheat would still have to be kosher wheat, right?
I mean, exactly. So the idea is that you have someone who is Jewish that has a hand in the production of the actual food product. Mm-hmm. But we do have the Jewish community having a history of looking at produce in terms of being kosher or non-kosher. And one of the most salient examples is actually during the grapes boycotts of the 70s and 80s, when you had a lot of farm workers in the United States who there was a lot of attention being brought to them of being very underpaid, being taken advantage of, sort of in the same time as the Bracero program under Reagan. And there was one of the kosher agencies in the United States deemed grapes to be non-kosher as a form of protest, to say, we don't support this particular use of this. And interestingly enough, this particular distributor of lettuce is also on the forefront of saying, we want to be beneficial to multiple communities, that we will be paying all of our workers a living wage. And in Las Cruces, $12 an hour is nothing to bat your eye at, especially when the minimum wage is not above the federal minimum wage.
Right.
So some interesting sort of aspects there, but it does show the power and sway that religion has. Couldn't you just say we want to make good, healthy lettuce for all peoples? Couldn't you just say we want to help peoples, you know, earn a living wage?
Well, there are movements for that. Some of them are fairly closely allied with the organic food movement, which I can take or leave for the most part. But really? You're counting that? Okay.
I'm counting that.
I apparently punned. There is the free trade stuff, and like there's fair trade, free trade.
Big difference.
I just get confused by all the words. probably not a great thing for a radio person, but yeah, the fair trade food movement. There's that, and that has a very different basis than the usual stuff that we've talked about here on the show, which is the organic stuff and the stuff not backed by science, and the idea that Monsanto is Satan incarnate on Earth who has decided to fill us all with disused Slayer albums. Actually, oddly enough...
Wait, that's not our position here on Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey?
No. Oddly enough,
No, he goes with Winger albums.
Wow. Wow, them's fighting words.
How many are there? Four? Six? Are they creeping? Swarming?
Winger?
I mean, yeah.
Creeping. Definitely creeping.
Oddly enough, the last one of the things I watched on YouTube this week was Edward R. Murrow's last television bit, which was called Harvest of Shame. And it was aired after Thanksgiving one year, and it was about just how the people who were picking all the food for Thanksgiving weren't really able to eat Thanksgiving stuff. It's one of his last things. Moving on, continuing Becky's expert status here, Hasidic rabbis are speaking out against an investigation by the state into private schools. Rabbi Aaron Teitelbaum said it's a bad time for Jews and that his congregation should pray to stop city officials from interfering with the raising of their children. The comments were in response to an announcement that the city's education department would be investigating whether a dozen private schools were meeting secular educational standards. One advocate for secular standards in yeshivas suggested that the city and community leaders were colluding to end the investigation. Now, this is a story we've been following for some time.
We have, and there's the results and reasons for all of the investigations have not been officially released, covered, et cetera, but we do have, at this time, several lawsuits that from individuals who have graduated from, you know, so-called schools that end up either suing the state, suing their schools, suing their parents, suing their religious leaders for failing to have been given a complete and thorough education. And when you look at what kind of oversight and certification and endorsement do these particular things that call themselves schools have, it's kind of a fine line. There are independent school associations, but the state and the government does have an invested interest in maintaining some certain levels of standards. You know, when you have, in most states, children have to receive schooling of some sort. You can homeschool your kid, but you still have to file paperwork with the government. And in certain states, there there are more stringent than others. If you can send your kid to a private school, but it still has to follow some kind of, you know, standard. And so in this case, we have these yeshivot that are being investigated for whether they actually provide secular, you know, standards up to a certain thing. I mean, are you teaching children how to read, or are you not teaching children how to read? Are you stunting their growth? You can teach all your religious things, but you also have to teach them how to read, how to do basic arithmetic. And we've seen reports from people graduating from these schools with an inability to do basic arithmetic, with an inability to read in English, especially a difference between the education of boys and girls in different areas of their educational experience. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of this. I am not a proponent of restricting a child's education for the purpose of religion. I am happy to live in a pluralistic environment, and if you want to educate your child in secular matters and complement that and supplement it with the religious education, that is up to you, and that's what it means to live in a country that honors someone's right to practice or not practice religion.
So one of the things that that complicates matters here, one of the reasons why I'm really paying attention to this one, is not only do they have these schools in this town in New York, but it seems like the people who are running the schools also kind of run the town.
In some different towns, yes. And there have been a few other long-form journalistic investigations into these particular towns. And when you can infiltrate a school board, it doesn't matter whether you're evangelical Christian and want, you know, to replace Common Core with the Bible, or whether you are Hasidic Jewish and you want to have vouchers for all of your public school kids to go to the private school. When you have the ability to sort of take over a town, infiltrate that way, and restrict the educational experiences of children, it's a problem. It doesn't matter which, you know, religious zealotry you subscribe to.
It doesn't matter which only one book you have. It's still only one book.
Precisely. This wraps right into what we talked about in the last segment of the guy wanting to replace Common Core with Jesus. This is just the same thing with different labels applied, and the end result is the same. It's students who only understand what they're told for the purposes of believing in their religion, unable to do math, unable to read anything outside of their books, just wholly unprepared for being successful citizens of the country that they're in, where the whole education system is designed to help them become better citizens.
Right.
It's a subversion of the entire concept of public education. So we have an email. This is Kim from Facebook, who writes, "I'm a Christian, but I'm not messaging to be hateful or to get into a fight. I'm somewhat familiar with atheism, and I'm not ignorant to learning about different religions, but how would one talk to a person who claims they are atheists if they are complete jerks?" That's a good question. I actually kind of like that. "I have talked to atheists, and I have friends who are atheists. They are very kind, and we have had great talks. But is there a line that so-called atheists can cross, making the atheist community look bad? I know it's an odd question, and I don't want to associate one jerk with an entire community." Atheism isn't a religion, but that's a quibble. I'll admit that in this context, that's a quibble. But Dan, why don't you take this one first?
Okay. I guess if you're the sort of ambassador of any system of beliefs or lack thereof to a distant system of beliefs or lack thereof, it's sort of your obligation to remain civil. Unfortunately, when you involve religious concepts like blasphemy, words that are offensive no matter how gently they're spoken, such as the idea that I don't believe that your God exists, and I think that there is an alternate explanation for this. Well, there's no nice way of saying, "I believe you're wrong." There just isn't. When people have a deeply held belief, there's no perfectly tactful way to say, "It's my opinion that you are mistaken, that you have been misled, or that you have ideas that are poorly thought out." And that is the position of atheists when it comes to talking about any other religion. That's sort of the defining characteristic of atheism, is that we think that religious believers are wrong in their faith that a higher power or spiritual being exists. Well, that makes it hard when you're talking about someone being a jerk or not, because it becomes a very subjective thing. If I tell you with my most polite voice over coffee that I have offered to pay for that I think everything you've based your life upon is a lie, there's no way for me to not sound like a jerk doing that. That just, it's just not possible.
So even with the mellifluous, you know, wonderful, calm voice, it would still be you so-called atheists are making all atheists look bad by telling me that I'm wrong and I'm just mistaken in everything.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder what kind of, you know, wonderful talks she's had with her kind friends or acquaintances of atheists, whether it's a matter of tone, whether it's a matter of the content. But I think you're onto something when you say, like, the bottom line, the content of what you know, we hold to be true or most observable is by default telling a Christian that we think that they're wrong and mistaken. The thing that puzzles me about Kim's email is when she says these so-called atheists. I don't think they're so-called atheists just because they might be jerks. They are definitely atheists. If they don't believe in God, they're atheists. They're not so-called. They're not pretend atheists.
Right. And, you know, when we talk about politeness in conversation, there's this heavy onus on the atheists, not only to prove that there is no God, but also to have to take a much higher road, that we have to be more polite and more subtle and more gentle in our belief that you are wrong. Whereas a lot of Judeo-Christians and various other religions, their belief entails that you believe differently than I do, therefore you deserve eternal torture. Which, again, there is no nice way to state that and say, you know, not only will you burn in hell forever, but you deserve to burn in hell forever for thinking differently than me. By comparison, I would say that saying, "and I think you are mistaken," is quite a bit more polite.
Way less jerky than you're going to burn in a lake of fire. Yeah.
Well,
you're going to burn and you deserve to. Oh, I think you're wrong. Which one of us is the jerk here?
Not everyone believes that you burn forever. I mean, let's be honest about that.
Sure, sure. A lot of them do. I'm playing the extreme.
For me, Kim, I don't think you're coming into this, and Becky kind of highlighted this, but I really want to bring your attention back to this, in that I don't think you're coming into these conversations as squeaky clean as you're presenting yourself. Is I think you're creating, perhaps unknowingly, a very negative environment in which these conversations take place. Now, you're saying you're messaging not to be hateful or to get into a fight. I appreciate that, and I believe you. But when you start saying people are so-called atheists or start claiming that atheism is yet another religion, you're already tainting the debate when you use these words, when you speak in this way. This is not as open of a conversation as you might think. And that's having been the quote unquote nice atheist in the room several times, who eventually people got mad at me because I was mean or something like that. That's generally what I'm walking into. Is I'm walking into a room where the person who's deciding whether or not I'm a good person or a bad person has already made their decision. And the only thing I can do, the only thing I'm allowed to do, because I can't change your mind because I'm an unbeliever, is basically is wish fulfillment. You want me to be the bad guy. So when you come in saying these things, all I have left in your mind is to be the bad guy. Now, to answer your question directly, there is nothing in atheism to say whether or not somebody or someone is a jerk. And proudly so. I'm proud of that fact. I that's one of the reasons I like being an atheist, is that I have to think for myself. I have to decide for myself rather than following some pre-planned algorithm to decide whether or not someone is a good person or not. There's no one specific rule they have to follow. I've met white supremacist atheists. I've met far worse than that, even in some ways. There are people I don't like and who I will not associate with who call themselves atheists. Joseph Stalin, for example. People love bringing that guy up. But it's not my atheism that defines whether or not I'm going to talk to these person. My religious outlook, which is none, has no input on this decision. And this comes back to something that I've been saying an awful lot. The place where my input comes in, the place where I'm making these decisions as to whether or not somebody has crossed a line with my association comes from humanism. We all share the same, we're all these animals, and we all have morals, we have rights by virtue of our existence. And thinking that just because you have some quality that makes you better than everybody else, naturally, without any, just because of the way you were born, that strikes very hard against my humanism, and I find it very difficult to continue working with somebody who labors under that pretension, which is why I fight what I fight in terms of civil rights, which is why I read the history I write. I just have a little bit more of an open mind when you talk to your atheist friends again. And maybe they won't seem quite so bad as you saw them this time. But unfortunately, that's all the time we've got. My name is Sam. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Dan.
Just happy to be here.
You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Reach us on Facebook at Ask an Atheist. You can Twitter us at AskAnAtheistWA. See you guys next week.